Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com. Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannon with you until 3 o'clock on this Friday. And this month is the 70th anniversary, 70th birthday of the Guinness Book of Records. And I am going to go straight to John Ryan now. John, good afternoon.
Oh, good day, Katie.
John, I'm first of all amazed it's been going 70 years. You're a collector.
Yes, we have been doing a bit. And just to confirm, it's 70 years of print edition, but it's actually 74 years since the birth of the idea.
And actually, the idea, the birth of the idea is a great story. Take me back. It's connected to Castlebridge in Wexford.
Correct, yes. So on the 10th of November in 1951, the then MD of Guinness, Sir Hugh Beaver, was down hunting game bird in the Sloblands in Wexford, which is very near Castlebridge. And there was an argument about what the fastest game bird in the world, in Europe, was when they got back to the Castlebridge house. That argument ensued, and there was no resolution from checking the books. So it was agreed, or it was determined, that the only way to resolve future arguments was to have a book, and a book of facts. So that was where the idea was born. And it was 4 years later, the MacArthur brothers then published the first book in 1955.
And how did you get interested in it then?
Well, it was obviously living near the town, you know, puts you in that proximity. But it is a story, really, that is held within the town. So for me, it was a case of heading down to the town one day. I lived most of my working career in Australia, actually. So I was only back here doing some work in Europe a couple of years ago. And I decided to head down to Castlebridge for a coffee. And that landed me in the Mill Pottery coffee shop, where I met Mairead Stafford. And she was explaining the story to me. And she passed me a brownie on a plate. And she said, I'll give you this brownie if you help us in the town with the Castlebridge project.
So the brownie obviously was tempting enough.
Yes, she makes a great brownie down there.
Right. So the project. So you're collecting. You're currently on a mission to collect every year of the 70 years.
That's right. So all the way from 1955 up to the current books as well. Yeah.
And you have many gaps at the minute?
We have. It's been going okay. Now, we had about 19 before we started this campaign a couple of days ago. We're down to around about 13 or 14 missing books, but they're certainly coming in. Their requests are coming in. And some people are actually giving us books we already have, but that's not a problem. You know, we'll certainly take some of them, because it's always good to have a few backups, because the books do wear out over time. And sometimes the books that people give us are actually in better condition than the ones we have.
And are any of them actually valuable, like some of the really early ones?
I wouldn't say they're massively valuable. I mean, you're talking probably in the region of 30, 40 euros or something like that for some of the original editions. There are some of them that are harder to get. So those ones would command a higher price.
What years are we are you talking about there now?
Yeah, well, certainly some of the earlier books. So there seems to be quite a few of the original 1955. There was quite a few of them because they had to print several extra editions. But then when you get into 57, I think 61 and 62, those ears we're struggling to find at the moment. But we know they're out there, so I think it's just a matter of waiting for them.
And did the ones back from the 50s, the early ones, did they look, was it the same idea, like the pictures and the, you know, what was the design like of the early ones?
Yeah, so the very early books were hardcover, a little bit smaller than what the bigger books that we see today. And the very early ones were just a plain cover, you know, some green ones, the blue, orange, and some pink. But then they actually put a sleeve over it. They still kept the hard cover. They put a sleeve over them. The sleeves, of course, are generally in very bad condition, as you can imagine. They've worn the test of time. And then they went into the more, you know, the books that we're used to today, which was a very bright A4 size book. And that's the one we're all more familiar with, I guess.
Yeah, and I assume it was the same in your house. Like, they're real stocking fillers, aren't they, at Christmas time in particular?
Yeah, I have to say, I think I'm making up for lost time, because I was that child in the street that didn't actually get one. But I was fortunate enough to have friends and cousins who did. So that was always where I reveled to call around on Christmas Day to see what the latest version looked like.
And it's funny, the one I always remember is the picture of the guys with the really long nails.
Yeah, very popular. And you'll also remember the ones with the tallest and the smallest people as well. They're always a big hit with people.
Yeah. And what are you going to do when you get them all? I'm assuming you'll be successful, John. What are you going to do with all 70 of them when you gather them together?
Yeah, well, as we've just described, they're actually very visually impressive, and you may have seen the picture that's been out there of the books already. So what we believe is going to be the appropriate thing is to put them on a bookshelf, all 70 of them, and to, if you like, think of it like a full wall, if you like, of books, and it will make an impressive photograph, you know, for anyone who's visiting the town and wants to get a feel for the book. So I think that's where it's going to be important. It really tells that story in that one bookshelf.
Yeah, and actually the thing is, I don't think a lot of people will remember or know that the origin story of the Guinness Book of Records, that it's tied to Castlebridge.
Yeah, look, as I said, it is very tightly held secret, but it is actually starting to come out now, and the reason is partly because of the time we're in, but also we're thinking back about what this story was really about. And what we know is that it was one book that came out, the book came out of an argument, but as we say, the argument essentially led to inspiration, and that inspiration has affected many millions of people around the world, as we know. So, you know, that's an important fact. It is all about, you know, this is about inspiration and those stories that are behind that.
Now, I have a list here of years that you're missing. So there's some in the 50s, like right through, there's little gaps there along the way. And as you say, even if you have them already, there might be a better copy of them out there that you'd be delighted to have.
Yeah, and what we're doing, we're giving people a digital certificate in recognition, and we will record the fact that they have been donors to the of those books to us. So as we get into our 75th celebration of their birth next year, you know, we will remember those people.
That is brilliant, John. It's a great project and it's a great idea. I've got a very important man on the other line now, Craig Glenday. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
And you have a fantastic job, Craig.
Well, I say I have the best job in the world, and I can say that officially because, yes, I'm the editor-in-chief at Guinness World Records, so I suppose I'm the one who ultimately gets to decide what goes into the books each year. So, yes, it's a real privileged job.
How long have you been doing that, Craig?
I've been now with the company, in just fact, about 23 years and 1 month. Not that I'm counting, but, and I've been editor-in-chief for 20 years. So I've seen a lot of things come and go in my time. Yeah, it's been a fascinating 20 years.
How do you get to be editor-in-chief of Guinness Book of Records?
I mean, I've always loved books. I mean, I've I remember reading the 1986 edition of the Guinness Book of Records when I was a young lad, and always wanted to work in publishing. I'd studied publishing at university and worked on many different topics. And that's, I think that's one of the useful traits, is that you know loads, you know, very little about loads of things. So my knowledge base is very wide but very shallow. and that's perfect for Guinness World Records. And then a friend got a job there, and I said, you must call me as soon as there's any job going, doing anything. I don't care what it is. I just really want to work at Guinness World Records. And she called me up a few months later and said that the website editor had resigned to because she'd won second place in a nationwide stand-up comedy competition on Channel 4. So she was leaving to become a stand-up comedian. So I rushed down the next day with my portfolio, and I convinced the boss to give me the job. So, yeah, it was a bit of luck, really.
Talk to me about the global reach of the Guinness World Records.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, for what is really, we're quite a small company. You know, there's less than maybe 300 employees, full-time at least. But we have this huge reach because we've been going for 70 years. We're celebrating that this year. But we've gone into everywhere, even where the Guinness beer, you know, there was a Guinness beer connection at the beginning. But we're now in countries that don't get Guinness, that, you know, a lot of places don't drink the stuff, don't like the stuff. And we're there, we've become the heralds for Christmas in many, many places around the world. You know, Christmas is coming because the Guinness World Records book is in the shops. And we mean lots of different things all around the world to different people. So in the Middle East, we're much more about business excellence, and China, we're very much more about the acrobatics and circus work, plus a lot of the businesses there as well. In the UK, of course, we're very known through record breakers on the TV show. You remember Roy Castle and Norris McWhirter. So we mean different things, but all around the world. We've got a very good brand recognition as well, but 85% of the world know the name Guinness World Records, which is an amazing fact, I think.
That is amazing. And is there particular pages, particular records that are the most popular, that people remember, that people talk about, that people want to break?
I mean, the most popular, I think, as a reader, will definitely be the human body chapter. We know that's the most popular. People love the tallest and shortest, the heaviest. You know, the long fingernails, I think that was mentioned by John. That's always been a big draw. And man, it's one of my favourite records, if not my all-time favourite record, is the longest fingernails. And I've been lucky enough in my job to go and measure them. So, yes.
You actually personally measured those fingernails?
I did, yeah. So the current record holder is an amazing lady in the USA called Diane Armstrong. And she has now, it's 1.3 meters per fingernail, so that's like over four foot per finger, and she has been growing them since, well, for the last now 26-27 years without trimming them. So
well, yeah, Craig, you can answer the question that has haunted me since I ever first saw that picture of those fingernail record holders. How do they exist in this world with those fingernails? Do they, like, how do they eat? How do they manage other bodily functions, shall we say?
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate question, isn't it? I mean, I asked that of Lee Redmond because she was the one I first encountered, and she had the record for years, and I went to visit her and flew her here to London as well. We had her over, and I said, how do you go to the bathroom? I mean, we're just all intrigued. And she said, carefully, is that what was her answer? which makes some sense. But no, I think they just find ways of functioning. You know, what you'll often find as well is that they've been growing them long enough that they've got grandchildren. That's a help, and grandchildren can be really helpful in, you know, getting you dressed and stuff. But they just choose clothes that they don't need to put their arms down long sleeves. Most of them can't handle sleeves, as you can imagine. Diane Armstrong, we went for lunch. I went over to the US to meet her and measure her nails. And we went for lunch, and I said, just because I was intrigued to see how she ate. And she uses like barbecue tongs and forks to get the food near her face. So it's, yeah, they do find ways. And it's from why it's fascinating to me is because it's someone has chosen to do this as a thing. They've chosen to, you know, if you're the tallest man, it's not by choice. that if you've got the longest fingernails, it's because you decided that you want this. And to me, that's absolutely fascinating. You know, the stories behind the records are incredible, really, in some of the cases.
And over the years, of course, you kind of expanded, haven't you, the type of records that people are going for?
Yeah, well, what we've done is that we've sort of tried to standardise the application process to make it fair for everyone. Because if you sort of arbitrarily choose what is right and wrong, then what you end up doing is eliminating lots of people who've got dreams and want to be recognised. You know, it's a bit like the Olympics. No, there's only so many sports that get recognised by the Olympics. And it's not that the other sports are any less important or valuable or meaningful. It just means that they're not celebrated, sadly, and we think that's a bit of a shame. So, you know, the guy that can pogo stick up the steps of the CN Tower in Toronto, he is just as amazing an athlete as Usain Bolt, who can run 100 metres really fast. You know, they're just different things that we're celebrating. We want to be as wide as possible. We want everyone to have the chance to be a record breaker, whether you're under 16, so this is a big category for us now. If you have impairments, we've got physical and mental impairment categories now to make it as wide as possible. And as long as it fulfills key criteria, like it has to be measurable, it has to be a single metric, it has to be breakable, and ultimately it has to be officially amazing. I mean, that's our tagline. And if it fulfills that, then we're sort of duty-bound, I think, to accept it as a category. So yes, it's gone much wider. And also we reflect what's happening in the world. You know, when I started at Guinness World Records, there was no such thing as the selfie or twerking or loom bands or the Harlem Shuffle, if you remember all these trends. But people were breaking records and applying sometimes in their thousands. So we have to go, well, okay, if this is a thing that human beings are doing, then our job is to record that, get it down and celebrate it.
Yes, and measure it, as you say. John, you actually made an attempt to break a few records over the years, did you?
Yeah, well, the town itself, a bit before my time, it was in 1986, they did the marathon handball record. And so that was a great cause for celebration in the town. And it was really, you know, celebrating the town that, you know, where the idea was born, and being able to do that was a... It brought a lot of people from far and wide. But more recently, we've done the Tin Whistle Ensemble record during the FACUL, yes, last year when it was in Wexford. And actually, that's where I first met Craig, actually. And Craig will probably give us some comment there, but I think he had a pretty good time over that. And certainly the people enjoyed themselves too. So,
and did you break a record?
We did. 2,516 were officially amazing. People playing in the Tin Whistle for 5 minutes at Wexford Park, Chadwick Wexford Park. So yeah, it was a great day out.
Brilliant, Craig. You remember that one?
I do. I mean, it was a really important trip for me because it's my first to Wexford. It was the first record that we were embarking on our 70th anniversary celebrations. We have been celebrating all year. The coming day at the end of this end of next month. And it was great to see a record successful. You know, it was so well organised. Everyone was very up for it. You know, that was the important thing. And we saw families coming together, some cases from all, like from around the world, who'd arrived to take part in this record attempt. So, you know, Wexford really went for it. And I'm so glad they more than doubled the record, which is fantastic. And yeah, it was a real honour to be there and to witness history in the making.
Hang on for me there, Craig. I've got Sarah on the other line. Sarah, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you?
You have a few books for us, have you?
I do. I have two here, on top of a few more that we gave to John last year.
What years have you got?
We have 1984 and 1986 here. To add to the collection.
Right. And would the Guinness Book of Records have been a big thing in your house growing up?
So my granddad is actually originally from Castlebridge, so it was always something that we grew up with. I think as any primary school child in the 90s before the internet, I think the Guinness Book of Records was something that, you know, you kind of ask for Christmas and pore over and really enjoy looking at, you know.
And your grandfather was the custodian?
He had, yes. He and his brother had a massive collection of, I think they gave 28 last year, that had been held by my family over to John. And he, both my granddad and all three of his brothers all worked actually in the mill there in, that Nuns owned in Castlebridge. And they supplied the grain to Guinness's. So my granddad always felt very proud of the Guinness Book of Records being, you know, originally thought of in Castlebridge.
Yeah, as I say, I hadn't known that until today, but it's a great connection. It's a great story for sure. Sarah, thanks for that. I want to bring in Noreen. Noreen, you
hello,
Noreen. You have one from what year?
I can't. You see, there's no date on it. I can't find a date.
Ah.
That's my problem. But I know it must be 45 to 50 years old.
Right. Is there anything I wonder that could give it away?
Well, I was just telling a researcher there, there's on the first page, there's Guinness Book of Records, and there's a medallion with an Irish harp on it.
Well, this would be before your time, Craig, probably. Is it ringing any bells with either of you guys?
I mean, it was probably 50s or 60s, because I think by the 70s we'd started to number the book. I mean, it depends on
it
the size.
Been,
if it's one of the, if it's a smaller book, then it was probably...
It's a hardback,
If it's a small
about
one, then
12
inches by 9 inches.
What colour is the cover?
It's
silver. The colour of it.
Yeah, it's silver with red writing. And lots of musical instruments on the cover.
Okay.
There's a cello and there's a music stand with music. They're all sort of, they're not photographs, if you know what I mean. They're sort of weird sketches. And then
sketches.
There's a sort of a clock of some sort.
Okay, John, does that ring any bells with any of the covers you've seen, John?
I'm a bit stumped at that one.
Silver. It's 1975. That's what it is. I've just had to check through my archives. Yes, 1975.
Yeah, that could be about right. Yeah,
so it's technically the 22nd edition, but it came out in October 75.
Yeah, that could be about right.
Would you
now,
be?
If you're interested, I'll send it on to you.
Oh, fantastic! I was just going to say, would you part company with it, Noreen? But you'd like you donate it, John? Would you be interested?
Yeah, I'd certainly love to have a chat with Noreen, and she can contact us on the Facebook page, probably the easiest way, if she hasn't already done so.
I have to tell you now, I have a vision problem, and I can only talk to you on the phone.
Noreen, we'll sort it out. We'll sort it out off air, and we'll make the connection with John. Thank you for that. I want to ask you, though, Craig, because I believe you, because of your... exalted position. You meet quite the few A-listers.
Well, I've had my moments with hanging out with celebrities and.
Go on, drop a few names for us there.
I recently did Hugh Jackman. He would have been a recent one, the Marvel actor. My biggest one that was I'll always break a toe name dropping is Beyonce, because Beyonce and I met at the World Music Awards. And in fact, I think she introduced me onto the stage because I was presenting an award. So that was always what an amazing experience getting to meet and hang out with these people and spend just a day in their life.
And you got a call once from Barack Obama?
I had this very strange call from Barack Obama's campaign manager. He said, "I'm sorry to call you, Mr. Glendy, but this is Barack Obama's campaign manager. I got your number from Oprah Winfrey." And so for some reason, I've never met Oprah Winfrey, but she has my mobile number. She gave it to Barack Obama. And then they called me. He was wanting to do a record before he was president. The candidates do this thing with a call. They make random telephone calls to the citizenry. And he wanted to do the most. And I don't think it ever happened in the end, or at least we didn't break the record. But I was just very flattered that Oprah Winfrey, I might be in her phone book.
Definitely one for the dinner party. Do we have Peter there? Yes, we do. Peter, good afternoon. Peter, can you hear us, Peter?
Yes, I can. Yeah.
So you have another one dating back quite some time.
1968 with the original dust cover, which has cartoons on it.
Wow. And was that your own copy? Was that your own copy?
Yes. I got it for my birthday when I was 10.
And you obviously minded it.
I did. I mind all my books. It's funny. And it's followed me around all over the world, so I'm now living in Wexford. Actually, I'm living about 10 minutes from Castle Bridge, where the book was founded.
Now, are you
willing... I live in the same locality.
Are you willing... You're not willing to part with this book that you've minded for 50-something years now?
I don't know. Do we have to donate them?
No, well, that's the original idea. Do you have... John, do you already have the 1968 one?
We do have a 68. Yes, we do actually have one.
Do you have one that does cover us?
I need to check now. I'm just looking at the list here, so I just don't have the stock in front of me, but I haven't noted whether... they normally do, but if the dust cover is in good condition, most of our dust covers are not. You know, they're a bit tatty.
This is pretty good. Yeah. It has cartoons of brides and rockets and the longest crocodile and...
The longest crocodile.
Man.
I love it. Peter, you obviously loved that book.
Well, I haven't looked at it for a long time. It took me a while to dig it out. But I'd be happy to talk about it or you just want to get a copy of it, is it?
Well, that's the project. The project is to build up this full library of all the books of the 70 years. It's a lovely thing to have, though, isn't it?
Oh, you don't want to put me on air, no?
You're on air, Peter.
Oh, I'm on air. Oh, my God. Sorry, I didn't realise that. I thought I was talking to a producer. Is he still there, that guy?
John is still there, and I'm delighted to have a production debate on the air.
I thought I was talking to a producer.
I'm only 10 minutes.
I'm sure I could,
myself,
yeah.
Peter.
Hello?
Peter, we'll sort you out off air.
I know, I might make a donation, because I actually live just up the road from Castle Bridge.
And you could always go and visit your book on the wall.
I could go visit my book, yes. Yeah.
Okay, listen, we'll put you in touch with John after the show. But thanks for the call, Peter.
And, hey, no problem. 1968.
With a good dust cover.
Katie, could I just add, it was a good point made there by Peter, which is about telling the story. And that's one thing that we do encourage people to remember, you know, Castle Bridge, because of the, you know, the importance of what was born there, to, you know, to feel that they're welcome to come back to the town.
There's a sign on the road when you come in, Guinness Book of Records founded here, but that's about the extent of it.
That's right. But that's what we're building up. We want people, encourage people to come back and tell their story. If they are record holders or if they're people that had certain experiences when they were with the books. So we're looking to build that up as a focus in the town as well.
John,
but just to make one small point.
Yes, Peter,
at this time,
quickly.
It was still Guinness. So it's the foreword is by the Earl of Iva, and then Ross and Norris McWhirter signed it. But it's become an American thing now, hasn't it?
I don't think it has, Craig.
Is it owned by Americans?
It's owned by a Canadian, just a Canadian individual, but it's very much produced in the UK. It's always been in London in terms of the publishing of the book. So we're kind of just left to get on with it, which is great. You know, we can just make the book as we want it. So we do sell more copies in America than anywhere else because of the size of the country, but. We're very much a British company.
Yeah, with as we now know, a big connection with Wexford, with Castlebridge and Wexford. Craig, great talking to you. John, thank you for that. And good luck with that project. Ah, yeah. Takes you right back. Standing in a circle, twirling slowly as Foreigner blasts away in the background. Dennis, good afternoon, yeah. Dennis Lahan. How are you?
Hello, Katie. I'm doing very well. Thank you very much. And thank you for getting in touch on the topic of the slow dance, because I think it's very important.
Yeah, because you were writing that you believe the removal of the slow set was one of the greatest crimes perpetrated against the bachelors of rural Ireland, a crime against all single men, but particularly against the tongue-tied and the humble in our herd.
Well, I do. I suppose we're going back probably nearly 30 years ago now. I guess the slow set has gone with about 30 years. But I would say from my own point of view, I wouldn't be married today if it wasn't for the slow set. Because we'd say back in the day, I was the bashful type and I wasn't. I'll put it to you this way. When you're farming, you can't go from the tractor, we'll say, spending a week on the tractor to, we'll say, spending a week looking at the back end of a cow to being John Travolta on Friday night. That won't happen. You need a little bit of help. Right. And the help comes from the music. Because when we used to go to a nightclub before, the only thing you had to do was ask someone if they wanted to dance. You didn't have to sidle up to them and say, and be like 007 or someone. You just had to ask them out to dance, and then the music did the talking for you, like you played there now, Foreigner. I mean, that's all you needed. That's all you needed, and that sort of gave you a step on the ladder to romance, as far as I was concerned, anyway. And I'm convinced I'd be a single man today only for the slow set. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
I'd say you're not alone in that one now, Dennis. But, I mean, I suppose we should explain, because we realised a younger member of our team earlier when we were talking about maybe talking to you today said the immortal words, "What's a slow set?" And I thought, God, there's a whole generation that have no idea what it feels like to have a DJ go, "We're going to slow it down now for a minute."
Exactly. And we used to have two rounds of it because, you know, there used to be an early set of it, of that slow music now, like what you played there. I mean, I'm not sure if you grew up in the 80s and the 90s, but we were bombarded with brilliant music back then, really, really good music, like we'd say Lionel Richie and people like that. I mean, that was just fantastic music, and it's made for slow dancing. You know, it's absolutely made for it. And even I was in band, and we'd say now last week having a cup of coffee with my wife, and on comes Bruce Springsteen's song "Dancing in the Dark," and we were having a coffee, and it's completely out of context. Now that kind of music was made for nightclubs and made for helping people get on. And it just seems to be almost redundant music now because there's no place for it anymore, you know, and that's an awful pity, I think. I've been writing now for the Irish Examiner for 20 years, and this is the one topic that comes back again and again. I have people asking me to see if I could get the return of the slow set. Now all I can do is write about it. And now today, in fairness, Liveline are highlighting it. And I think if a disco or something in Ireland, I don't think any exists at the moment, but I think if one opened its doors and guaranteed two rounds of slow sets every night, I think the place would be mobbed. I think it would.
And of course, there was an important thing there as well. The first slow set wasn't the most important slow set. It was the last slow set of the night was the important one in terms of any further follow-on activities.
It was. And I mean, we'll say in Mookroom Town, I'm in Mookroom Town here at the moment now, and there was four nightclubs in this town. There's no nightclub there now. There was four nightclubs with, there must have been hundreds and thousands of people at these nightclubs. And yes, the first slow set was nearly getting your grounding. The second one was do or die then, really, because you kind of had to make a move then or else you're going home, you know? And it was a very simple thing for people to do, like just to ask someone to dance, and they either did or they didn't. And it was a brilliant opportunity, I feel, for people who were a little caught in with regards to talking, you know?
Were you one of those lads, though, that, you know, maybe got a first refusal and then worked his way down the line of girls?
No, because I think if you started doing that, you'd get known as a kind of a person who just didn't give a damn at all. No, I don't think that wouldn't be a great reputation to have. No, that wasn't me anyway. But I don't think it would be a good idea to do that. But and another thing about the slow dance, you didn't even have to know how to dance. All you needed to have to do was just kind of glide along to the music.
I don't think there was any... Dennis, in my memory of it, there was no gliding at all. There was, you stood basically on the one spot and you twirled very slowly.
Maybe it was different in West Cork, so, but I think we used to glide. That was my memory of it anyway, that we used to glide.
Let's have another yeah. blast. What about this one, Eternal Flame?
Close your eyes. Stand. Do you feel the same? Am I only dreaming? Or is this burning an eternal flame?
Oh yeah, brings me right back. Dennis, you stay there with me, will you? I need to take a break. We'll be back on this
after. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And we're talking about the slow set and Dennis's one-man campaign to bring it back. Dennis, did you actually ever talk to the girl when you got her on the dance floor? Was there any actual chat involved at that point?
Yeah, there would be a little, but I'd be hoping that the lights of the disco would probably dazzle her, and she'd be hoping that she'd be seeing something that she liked, that the lights would confuse her in some way, maybe, and maybe just make me a little better looking than I am, maybe. So yeah, you'd try your best to talk, but I mean the music was loud as well, so you just were basically shouting, really, I suppose. But I mean the songs, really, like you played Eternal Flame there before the break, and you'd be running when that song started, because you'd be just trying to nab someone before they headed off to the toilet, because that seemed to be the modus operandi back then, that's where they'd head for. So you'd literally run to the toilet door and basically
trying to head them off at the pass before they got into the toilet.
You were, yeah, that was the feeling anyway in Bandon, I remember. And like the songs, just, I mean, the car song, Their Drive, oh my God, like, what a song. I mean, the song did everything for you. There's a change in tempo in the middle of that song to, like, changing the turbo in the tractor. It just brings you up a gear again. I mean, it was just fantastic. It was just fantastic music that we were gifted this music, and then just threw it away, just absolutely threw it away 25 years ago, and I have no idea what young people are doing now to meet partners. I haven't a clue, because I wouldn't know how they do it, or anyone. I don't know how they do it. I don't know, are they up to Willie Daly up in Clare or where? But dancing is not how it's done anyway, and that's an awful pity. That's a real pity, I think, you know. It was a bit like, if I hadn't said it already, a bit like James Horan up there in Mayo when he was wanting to put down his airport. Like, I'm convinced that this runway that we call the slow dance, I'm convinced that runway was put down, that the planes would take off again. I'm convinced they would, because I think that there's a fierce opening for it, but it's just not happening, you know. So
hang on, let's have another one. Yeah. This is another absolute classic from that time. Eric Clapton, Wonderful Tonight.
And then she asked me, do you feel all right? And I say, yes, I feel wonderful tonight.
Swaying here. Mags.
Hello, Kate.
What does that do for you, Mags?
Oh, my goodness. Gives me shivers up my back, up my spine. It really does.
Take me back. Would you agree with Dennis that we've lost something great in the loss of the slow set?
Yes, definitely. You need to bring back the nightclubs, the slow sets, differently because, you know, they'd be outside in and they might get dancing with each other. You know what I mean? Compared to the way it is with these dating apps and, you know.
Tell me your own situation, Mags, at the moment.
Well, I'm divorced now a good number of years. And I have been on a good number of dating apps. Courtney, Match.com, Bumble, Tinder, no luck at all. I would meet them. They'd be totally different to the picture, the profile. They're only looking for fun, basically. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, mind you, I'd say there was a few lads on the slow sets who were only looking for fun as well, to be fair.
Yeah, but at least you can see them. And to be honest, you're on these apps and you're texting all the time. And then they have ghost you. And then when you go to meet them, they either won't turn up or they're a totally different person. You know what I mean?
This is the problem, isn't it, with the apps? That there's no connection there to begin with. And going back to the slow set days, where would have been your local disco, Mags?
Down in Cong, in Mayo that time.
And was
there'd be a hall? Yeah. There'd be a hall down there.
And Eric Clapton was your go to for the slow set.
Yes, definitely.
And if there was a club now, would you go back again at this stage?
Oh, I would if they could bring it into Galway, Mayo, all over. My goodness, they'd be queues, I'll tell you. It badly needs to come back in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. There was friends of mine at a function there recently and there was fast music playing and they said the dance floor was empty and slow music came on and I was told that the dance floor filled. And, I mean, I don't know why. Why? I mean, I think there's an economic benefit to it as well. So I don't understand why it's not coming back. Because even the dance itself was a lovely thing. Like, even if it went no further than the dance. I mean, that was a fantastic thing to get on your night out and go away home. And there was something lovely about that as well.
Delighted with yourself. You know, yeah, indeed. Mags, thanks for that. Joanne... Dennis was talking there about the trying to cut people off on their way to the loo. Joanne?
Hi, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, you remember this.
Oh, that was my tactic. That was my go-to. As soon as the DJ announced the slow set, I used to leg it to the bathroom, yeah.
And now, explain to us why you did that.
Well, because you might have been dancing with someone and just kind of humouring them, you know, and then if the slow set came on, you excused yourself or you legged it before he could ask you, you know, because I don't know, but it was, I used to see like the girls would be all sitting down having a chat and this fella would come along and he'd ask the first one to dance and she might say no, so he'd keep going down the line till he got someone who agreed. So myself and a few of my friends, we used to just run to the loo.
Dennis says he never did that, but I definitely witnessed that many, many times.
I just realised later in life that they didn't want to go to the loo at all. They were just running off the dance floor. So, I mean, once I popped that. Yeah. So, running away from the lights for me, I guess. But anyway.
You used to have the lads that would just, they didn't care who they danced with so long as somebody got up so they could say they got someone up for a slow set, you know. So, yeah, we did. We used to avoid that like the plague, I'm afraid, yeah.
And when you would, I mean, are we talking about the 80s or the 90s, Joanne?
We're talking about the 80s, Katie.
All right, so we're talking about, I'm trying to picture the get-up of you back in at that time.
And the get-up of me would have been kind of like, we'll say, the Madonna era of the Like a Virgin, if you remember that. She used to wear the little frilly socks out over the little boots and the tall mini skirt and the neon vest. Do you get it now?
And the bit of netting over it, yeah.
Exactly, yeah, that was it, exactly, yeah.
A lot of neon pink, I remember, yes.
Neon pink, yeah, and neon pink eyeshadow as well.
Yes.
Fabulous.
So, Joanne, I take it you didn't meet your husband on a slow set?
No, I didn't, actually. No, I didn't. We won't go there.
Do you think they should be brought back?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, I'd love it. Every time I hear the one for me now that stands out was Total Eclipse of the Heart, Bonnie Tyler.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Oh, that song takes me back. Yeah, yeah. I've met many nice person, but no, not my husband. That was brilliant.
I don't have Bonnie, but I do have another absolute stalwart of the slow sets, Michael Bolton.
Oh, God.
And we will take a break.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Step into summer with our new curtain designs and colours. Explore our latest designs in-store or online.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Siobhan, every one of these is bringing back all sorts of memories. Siobhan, good afternoon, Siobhan.
Good afternoon to you. How are you?
You still slow dance, Siobhan.
We still slow dance. We're 50 years together. And I come down in the mornings and the next thing a record is put on. And my husband Raymond still puts his arms around me. We dance for 2 to 3 songs and then we have our breakfast. And that's after all these years. And Foreigner, I have to tell you about Foreigner because this is why I rang you. That particular song, now we'd love rock and roll, but Foreigner would come on. We would have our arguments when we were young and we'd have a big row and I wouldn't be talking to him then and I'd be downstairs. So he'd go upstairs to his box bedroom where all his music was and about 10 or 15 minutes later, he would be playing Foreigner, but it would go on for about 6 times to try and make up.
Well, this is the I Want to Know What Love Is.
So he hasn't changed, yes, and he hasn't changed. He hasn't changed. He's still the romantic.
That is the loveliest story, no. Siobhan.
Yeah, yeah. Music is lovely. Music is great for everyone. And it's a pity that people stopped the dancing. I don't know about the slow dancing, but dancing was a great thing for young people to meet up.
This generation
doesn't have it. Yeah.
And Dennis was telling us that his memory of the slow dancing was a bit of gliding. What's your style now? Because you've been perfecting this for 50 years.
Well, no, we wouldn't be the old school, but we would be gliding around the kitchen, but we actually would be doing the what would you call it, the rock, the twist and the whole lot, the John Travolta, you know, the Pulp Fiction movie?
Yeah.
And in that, there's a scene from, I think it's a rock song anyway, a rock and roll song. It's a teenage wedding, it's called.
Yes.
And if you can get to play that for me sometime, I'd like it. But we dance to that in the kitchen after a romantic dance.
And this is before you eat your breakfast?
This is before we eat our breakfast. So we're flying.
You should be.
And it keeps us going. We never lost it. We never lost that loving feeling. We never lost it. And music is very important.
That is just the nicest story.
Well, he's very good. And he's at the moment, he's very ill. But we've only got a short time together. But he's still exactly the same.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Siobhan.
You couldn't get more romantic. No, you couldn't get more romantic than that.
Oh.
No. That's it.
Siobhan, I'm sorry to hear that. But it's such a lovely story that after all these years, you can still dance around the kitchen every morning.
Yeah, yeah. Look that up. It's a teenage wedding, and it's a real rock and roll number, and they do a great little dance, so we can still do it.
Oh, yeah, that's the iconic dance from Pulp Fiction, isn't it? Yeah. Yes, we'll see if we can find that one for you, Siobhan. Thanks so much for the call. Lovely to hear that story.
Thank you.
Brian, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I am very well, Brian. What would be your slow set
My story, Katie, was the rugby club in Tullamore was where it happened on a Saturday night. And the last slow set of the night would always start with Bonnie Tyler, Lost in France. And if you didn't shift then, you went down to Frank Sweeney's for the curry chips. And down there, everyone who happened shifted would be down there and you'd have a better chance. Now, I never went down there. My friends used to tell me that. I never had to go down.
No, because you obviously were never successful.
With
the help of Bonnie Tyler.
God help that. But anytime I hear that song on the radio, I went, oh, Jesus, you know.
Now, I don't think we have the Lost in France one. We might have the previous Bonnie Tyler we mentioned. Do we have the classic, that one? Let's hear it. Together we can take
Nothing I can do, a total eclipse of the heart.
I can see the video for that right now as well, Brian. Can you?
I can. And funny, Katie, I moved to Dublin and I met my wife in Bad Bob's backstage bar.
Ah, yeah. Now, Bad Bob's was the classic, actually, because I think it did slow sets. And it did the chicken curry as well on the break.
Upstairs, Katie, with the peas. Yeah. I think you might have been there yourself some night.
I might, because I did, in fact, live around the corner from Bad Bob's for an important...
I know, Katie. Right. But so that's my story about Frank Sweeney's curry chips and... Bonnie Tyler and the rugby club.
Thanks for that, Brian. Great memories. And see you, Brian. John,
bye-bye.
Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Okay, who is your go-to for the slow set?
Oh, definitely had to be Garrett Brooks and The Dance.
Oh, yeah. Now, that was more a 90s one, wasn't it? The Dance would have been a 90s classic, was it?
It would have been, actually, yes, it would have been. But God, it was from the minute it came on. My God, you'd have to go on the hunt. So you would.
what was your? Where did you do your dancing at that stage?
My Carrick Springs in County Cavan. To a DJ Bob Conway. I know he was 2FM DJ at the time as well. And so many fond memories of them times. And I don't know. I feel people are missing out on this now. Like, it was an incredible time. Every Saturday night, you would be ready to go, ready to rock the place, and of course, ready to try and meet your future wife.
I don't know, were you really hunting for a wife at that stage?
You're keeping your options open.
Here he is. Here's the great man.
Looking back on the memory of the dance we shared beneath the stars above. For a moment, all the world was right. How could I have known that you'd ever say goodbye? And now, I'm glad I didn't know the way it all would end. The way it all would go. Our lives are better left to chance. I could have missed the pain that I'd have had to miss the dance.
John, Were you right back there in that dance floor?
Oh, I was just doing the little slow jive here on the seat.
Tell me now, would you be timing it like, would you go in the minute you'd hear the first bit of the slow, you'd hear the DJ going, we're going to slow it down now, would you be out there on the hunt immediately, or would you hold off and see what the lie of the land was?
Oh no, straight away, you'd have to get in there straight away now to get the cream of the crop, like, or to be gone. You know?
Did you have that situation of people running for the loos as well?
I don't know what it was about. Like, the slow sets used to give the ladies, I don't know what, just y'all used to leave anyway.
Maybe trying to get away from you guys on the hunt for the cream of the crop, maybe, John.
Maybe it was. I often had to cut off a young lady on the way to the toilet, like, and, but it was the best excuse ever. Maybe later, I'm just on the way to the toilet. It was always a very, very useful excuse.
John, thanks for that one. Bring in Martin. Martin, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you doing?
Yeah, take me back now. Where did you do your dancing?
Kilbegan in Westmead on the Harriers in Tullamore.
Oh, yeah. Go on. And what do you remember?
Time now to be... Well, to be the girls across the floor and the boys on the other side. So we had what they call the big lonesome walk. You walked across the floor to look for a slow dance.
That was a lonely walk.
You know? Oh, Lord. And then if you said no, you had a long walk back.
Now, tell the truth.
And all the boys dealing with
you. Tell the truth. In desperation, might you have gone on and asked for a few more along the line at that time?
Well, you would, yeah. You'd go up the line. You'd go maybe three or four. And if you think you had danced after three or four, you better step back. Go back and sit down.
You just accept defeat at that point.
Yeah, wait till the next one.
Now, the Dennis was saying there was two slow sets. My memory is three slow sets in the Cliff House in Ballybunion.
Three slow sets, yeah. On the set, there was three dancers, right?
Yeah.
Three slow ones, and then you had three fast ones. Do you remember that? There was three jives. And then there'd be three slow ones. And the slow ones, like, was the only chance to get it. We'd say, talking to a girl, you'd ask her name and where she came from and how often does she go to the dance. Stuff like that. And after three dances then, right, you'd say to her, do you want to stay for another set, right? And if she said, yeah, well, you had her shifted.
That was it.
That was your shift.
Will you? That was the line, wasn't it? Will you stay on?
Yeah. Will you stay on for the next one? And she said, yes.
That was it. You're in.
You had her shifted.
That was it. And would you move on to the snogging part while still on the dance floor? That was another decision that had to be made. No.
Yeah. No, you take your time. There was a balcony in the hall in Kilbegan, upstairs. And you bring her upstairs for a bottle of Coke or a bottle of orange. And then you move in for an old snog. But your one upstairs was called Malty Keary, you know. And she was saying, easy now, easy, easy. Oh, Lord. Thought about the shame of it.
Right. Good times, Martin. Good times.
Ah, look, there were great times. I don't know how people know what discos, how to catch young girls, how to shift women.
But sure, there aren't.
You know, how to talk to women.
There's no discos at all. This is the problem, Martin. This is what Dennis is saying, that we need not only to bring the slow set back, but to bring the discos back. I have to take another break, Martin. Thanks for that.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Mary, good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
Which one is it that that brings back those very visceral feelings?
Yeah. Yeah, I think my bladder gets affected too now. I need to go with Knights in White Satin. Oh my God.
So when you hear Knights in White Satin, where does it bring you back to?
It brings me back in a time machine, feeling nauseated, to our lovely disco in the Hint that we had in the late 70s, early 80s. And lots of those songs you played were part of it. But to me, what stuck in my head was Knights in White Satin. Oh my God. The man earlier was talking about gliding. No one could glide or move to that song. You were static.
Yeah, it didn't exactly have a beat or anything.
It had a kind of a low level hum. Oh God!
But you knew when that came on, when Knights in White Satin came on, the turntable, things were getting serious.
things are getting serious, yes. But I was lucky. I wasn't mad for discos, to be frank, but I had a summer job in the complex where the disco was. So I escaped a lot of discos by working in my little sweet shop at the disco, would you believe it? Yes. So my story isn't a story of romance, really. It's the anti-romance story.
Oh. But I think, actually, in fairness, like talking to all the male callers we're having there is talking, remembering that lonely walk across the floor and the hoping against hope you'd get a yes.
Yes.
A lot of girls were very brutal to those lads, I think, thinking back.
Yes, it was brutal. And I wonder, would people today be able for it? Just little points I'm making in my little head. I don't know, because, I mean, those days it was just commonplace that people were, you know, it really did happen. It was. But anyway, I'm getting maudlin now thinking about not my family.
But you don't have any romantic memories of those slow sets anyway, Mary?
No, I'll be frank with you, no. I'm not going to butter this one up, no.
No, you were too busy flogging sweets in the sweet shop.
But it makes me smile. Well, the odd time I did go to the disco, but I would hear all the songs, of course, and be kind of glad that I wasn't at their mercy, so that kind of way. But I think it does bring back wonderful memories, though, of the Hinch in the summertime those days, and, you know, and the DJ and all the youngsters, and it was lovely. It was really lovely. It would be hard to replicate it now. You couldn't, really. You know?
Oh, okay, yeah. Well, if this is going to trigger you, cover your ears, but here we go.
Oh, no! Oh, God, no. Never reaching the end. Oh, did you have to do that to me? I'm having a nightmare.
It had to be done, Mary.
Never meaning to send. Oh, no. And I don't think I would have looked very good in white satin anyway. Oh, no. Stop.
I'm telling them to stop. They won't stop, Mary.
hang on.
We've got another fan of Knights in White Satin. Stephen, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Yeah,
does that have the same kind of effect on you as it has on Mary?
And it was definitely, it was the favourite in the Club of Go-Go on Abbey Street. And the Five Club on Harcourt Street, they were the places I used to hang out in the late 60s, early 70s. Yeah, and we called the slow set a lurch.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that, yeah. The lurch, yeah.
Oh.
And was that the Knights in White Satin, that was like a real classic of the lurch?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and it was quite a long song, so it kind of gave you time to get to know each other.
My God. Like, you're against us tomorrow. Make it stop.
I mean, there was a thing as well. Actually, the length of the song was very important. A lot of those power ballads did go on for a long time.
Yeah.
And there was the whole issue as well. There was that Hazel O'Connor song. What was it called? Give it to me. The song had a break in it. So if you were trying to get away from the guy you were dancing with, it gave the perfect opportunity. But you'd.
There was always that
conversation had to be had about, no, it's not over yet. Hang on. Let's have a quick listen before we go to. Yeah. Yeah, that was a bit where you'd have to go, no, there's more, there's more. We'll take a break. Joe
Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Gary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
What memories does all of this bring back for you?
It brings back a lot of memories of aspiring to something that didn't always happen, if it ever happened. And I was always kind of more in admiration of my friends who were kind of had the guts to walk up to somebody, some stranger, and just say, would you like to dance? You know, it was It was that simple, but I could never make it that simple for myself.
You were too shy.
Absolutely, yeah. Completely, yeah. You've got it on one there, yes.
And did you ever ask anyone out to slow dance?
Oh, I did, yeah.
Oh, you did, okay. Okay, good. I thought you might have been a lost cause altogether.
Not totally, no. But I did very well in the end as well, so it's actually a very happy ending story. So, yeah, really good.
Did you meet your wife that way?
I kind of did, yeah. And we met at a party, and there was all kinds of music being played. But it didn't really matter. I was smitten, and that was good enough for me.
Yeah, of course, that was the other thing. These songs would be played at parties as well to get people in the mood at a certain point of the evening.
Absolutely.
I know this is one of your favourites. Have we got Kate Bush there?
Absolutely, yeah.
Is that yours? Yeah.
It's my wife's favourite. Anything but Kate Bush, she loves.
Yeah. Oh, this is a good one, in fairness.
Yeah, it really is. But yeah, depending on where you are, that music could just ring out all across the streets and down everywhere, because people, when we were out, we went on the tear and we had a great time. We just made sure we made the best use of the time that we had.
Yeah, no, Kate Bush was a lot of the ones we're playing are very cheesy, but in fairness, Kate Bush doesn't fit into that category. Gary, thanks for that. I have so many callers hanging on for me here. Walter, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
Yeah, did you meet your wife on a slow set?
I did indeed. There's a very short story. I know it's getting late for time, but I was one time, as I thought, it was a telephone romance I had with a girl that we made a telephone romance, and I received a phone call to say that it was terminated. So that was heartbreaking at the time. But then the next day I was in shopping in Carlow, and I looked out the window, and my future wife, which I didn't know at that time, looked in at the same time, who was a good friend of this other girl. And then the following Saturday night, we were at the youth centre in Carlow. It was a great place for discos. And I asked her out to dance. And I discovered many years later that she was actually in the telephone the day the other phone call was made to me. So I think it must have been destiny.
So you were dumped by telephone, and she was there to witness that, and
Pick up the pieces afterwards, yeah. The song I most remember, and it's not necessarily a real slow song, was If Ma Could See Me Now. That was a song we were dancing to. We made a slow set out of it, but a friend of mine came up to me and just said, if Mary Lacey could see you now, which was my mam. And of course, we were embarrassed and everything else. So that night, Bernadette is her name, she was going home with a friend whose father was picking her up. So that was me shot for the night. But I did meet her the following Saturday or Sunday at the Carlow Regatta. And as I say, then the rest is history.
How long are you married?
45 years.
Very good. God bless the slow sets. Walter, thanks for that. I just want to squeeze in one more. Sorry, Walter. We'll just get to Sandra very quickly if I can. What's your slow set classic, Sandra?
Hi, Katie. How are you? Great show. I could bring back some great memories. I think my classic slow set has to be Bright Eyes by Art Garfunkel.
Oh, yeah. That was a good one. An absolute classic and
a
banger.
Absolute. Yeah, great memories.
We're actually out of time. We don't even have time to play Art Garfunkel for us, but thanks for that. We can go home and put it on Spotify, I suppose. And Dennis, thanks very much. Great. I hope that campaign has gotten a good boost from today. But that's all we have time for, and that's all from me. Joe will be back with you on Monday. Sean Marren was our broadcast coordinator. Research was by Richie Byrne. Mark McGrath was on sound, and today's programme was produced by our series producer, Annette Egan. Stand by now for Ray Darcy, and enjoy your weekend.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.